मिलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदामयं तथापि स्वापदन्तिकं वन्देहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवंश्च श्रीरूपां कृचाथां सहगना रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं हरिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधापदान् सहगना ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धु जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिका कान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तु ते सप्तकाञ्चना गौरङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रियै वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च अतिथानां भावनिभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासति गौरभक्तवृन्द great honor to be with all of you this evening. Thank you for coming. Special gratitude to all our special guests. To Radhe Shyam Prabhu for his very brilliant, thrilling, enlightening speech. The subject tonight is engineering a better world. How many of you in this room have studied engineering? Raise both of your arms if you've studied engineering. Studied engineering, raise both of your arms and chant Hari Bol. How many have not studied engineering? So we are a minority. So all of you engineering students and graduates, I am hoping you are engineering a better world. From a person who hasn't studied one day of engineering, I will give you some of my reflections. We have spent enormous amounts of money and energy focusing on outer space. But humanity today practically puts no energy or focus at all in understanding our own inner space. One of the great authors of the West, Ralph Waldo Emerson, has said that the reason the world is in such disunity and lies in heaps and waste is because man is disunited from his own self. This is a principle that is universal. In the Bible, one of the most prominent teachings of Jesus is, what will you gain if you achieve the whole world but you lose your own eternal self? There are three basic views of the world we live. I'd like to very briefly study them. One is the very materialistic view, wherein people see the world as the only real reality. Others is a Mayavad view, that the world is an illusion. And the third is the Vaishnava view, that the world is the sacred property of God. It is real, but it is temporary in its manifestations. Now, the conception that the world is the only true reality leads to the consciousness that it really doesn't matter what we do as long as we get what we want. If we hurt people, if we trample on moral values, ethical principles, if we get money, if we get fame, if we get power, if we get sensual and emotional pleasures, it's all justified. Because ultimately, what is that saying? Eat, drink, and be merry, because tomorrow may never come. When we believe that this world is the only reality, then even our so-called moral principles are built on a very weak foundation. Because when temptation and fear come, why not break our moral and ethical values if I could get something better? Then we become servants, victimized servants of greed, envy, lust, anger, arrogance, and illusion. Why not? And we see it so prevalent within the world today. As Radhe Shyam Prabhu was saying, people take certain types of intoxications that are proven to destroy your health. Why people do it? And it's not reducing, it's growing proportionately within our society. This conception, if it feels good now, it really doesn't matter. What else? What matters is me. Sometimes the world we live in today, it's called the me generation. Janasya moho yamaho mameti. I, me, and mine. So much is based upon what makes me happy. what I can acquire to call mine. I am this, I am that, I have done, I have not done. In other words, it's a world that is so much conquered by this tendency of selfishness and egoism. And so much of that is born from the conception that this world is the only reality. Another conception is that the whole world is nothing but an illusion. It doesn't actually even exist. It is an illusion that we are thinking that it exists. Jagat mitya. The truth is real, and the whole world is an illusion. Now, for those who are thinking like this, it's a good impetus for liberation after death. Because if the world's illusion, it really doesn't matter if we live or die. What matters is somehow or other we get out of it as soon as possible. And whatever it takes to get out of it, it doesn't really matter because it's an illusion. Now, the environmental problems of today, the ecological condition of the world today, is extremely precarious. You know, many geologists, scientists, and other such informed people tell us that so many of the inconsistencies in nature and the tragedies are due to an imbalance that human beings are creating within the environment. I was at a conference a year and a half ago. Some of the most accomplished professionals in various fields were there. In medicine, in industry, in investment, in politics, in entertainment. And there was one seminar, I guess you would call it. There was a few thousand people attending. And a person cited from medical research that the people living in the world today, one half of all men will sometime in their life get some form of cancer. Statistically, one half of men that are living in the world today will get some form of cancer during their life. And one third of women will be stricken by cancer. As far as the, what is the reason for that? What are they doing? Hari Hari. You are a fanatic. Because of all the pollutions and all the harmful chemicals in the air, in the water, in the food, and the global warming situation, the Ganga and the Yamuna, you know, these rivers, by Western standards, they're literally hundreds and hundreds of times more dangerous bacteria in those rivers than are considered even acceptable for human sustainability. And yet we keep dumping more and more and more pollution. Why? We don't have to do that. If we started using so much of the funds and the human energy that we're using in so many other areas to actually clean the air and clean the rivers and clean the earth, it could be done, for sure. There's no prioritization. You see this philosophy that the world is an illusion. If we see all this stuff happening, who cares? It doesn't exist. Let everybody pollute the rivers and pollute the air and let everybody die of cancer and all kinds of stressful heart diseases. It really doesn't make any difference whether people suffer, whether animals suffer, whether any, because this world is an illusion. What's really our impetus, the whole idea, is to get out of this crazy, contaminated, condemned world. Let's get out. And whatever we leave behind really doesn't make any difference at all, because the world is an illusion. And unfortunately, even though the basis of many of the philosophies that say the world is an illusion, you know, speak about morality and ethics and respect for Mother Earth, what really is the substance of it? Because it doesn't really exist anyway. Where is the call for action within the world we live? The call for action is only to get out. But then we have the Vaishnava philosophy. The philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam, of Bhagavad Gita. The philosophy that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ballabhacharya, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, and these great souls taught. They taught us Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam, according to Ishopanishad. The absolute truth is the source of everything that exists. The absolute truth is perfect and complete. And everything emanating from the absolute truth is also perfect and complete. Janmadhyasayataha. Everything emanates. The material world, the spiritual world, everything is coming from Krishna. Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, Krishna says in Gita. This whole world is God's property. If we see it in this way, we are free from that greed and envy and anger and lust, because we understand I'm not the proprietor, I'm the caretaker. If we see somebody else doing well, we celebrate their good fortune, because we understand we're all brothers and sisters, we're all spirit souls, we're all children of God. We're not envious. Exploitation is a symptom of a disease of a selfish, egoistic heart. Compassion is a symptom of a person who's actually found inner fulfillment within their hearts. So this is so important for the world today to understand, to build our lives and our relationships with other living beings, humans and other species of life, and to build our relationships with Mother Earth, with the environment, on the principle that everything is sacred. Maya means energy. Maya means the energy of God. And Maya is categorized sometimes in two ways, categorized as Mahamaya and Yogamaya. It's the same energy. This whole material world is God's energy. All the manifestations with this energy are under the influence of time, therefore they're temporary. And they're under the influence of the three modes of nature, goodness, passion, ignorance. The spiritual energy, everything is Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. But it's actually, what is the difference between these energies? Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas explain, it's really on the basis of our perception. If we see this world as God's energy, as Krishna's property, then we're actually seeing it in its true spiritual nature. But if we don't see it in relationship with God, then we see it as this is mine and this is yours. This is America, this is Russia. This is Pakistan, this is India. This is Palestine, this is Israel. There's so much conflict. But true religion is meant to unite people, not divide people. Hindus, Muslims, Christians, Jews, Sikhs, Jains, Parsis. These religions are all manifestations of God's grace upon humanity to come to this earth to actually give us an understanding how we are all children of God. Wherever there's life, there is a sacred child of God. And everything is the property of God. And we're meant to be a family to utilize it properly. This conception is everything in this world is meant to be used for the purpose of seva, or unselfish service. We often give the analogy of the Ramayana, where there was Ravana. Ravana kidnapped Sita. Sita is the Hladini Shakti of the Supreme Absolute Truth. She is the feminine aspect of God. She is, within this world, in the spiritual world, she's Ram's eternal consort, and in this world. But when that same energy, that same personality of Sita comes into the realm of material existence, she becomes Bhumi, or Mother Earth. Mother Earth, Bhumi, or Sita, is Ram's consort. Ravana, he was an intellectual, he was a scholar of the Vedas, he was extremely powerful, extremely influential, but he had one problem. He was seeing in terms of I and mine. He wasn't seeing in terms of I'm God's servant and everything is God's property. And he kidnapped Sita to exploit her for his own selfish purposes. Now Sita was born out of Mother Earth because she actually is the goddess of Mother Earth. And then we have Hanuman. Hanuman was also a Vedic scholar. Hanuman was also very influential and very powerful. Ravana and Hanuman had so many, on a external level, they had so many similarities. But there was a difference. Hanuman dedicated himself to bring Sita back to Ram. And Ravana dedicated himself to take Sita away from Ram. And there was a whole battle over this difference of opinion, or this different world outlook. Well, everything in this material world, the whole ecology environment of this world, is Citta's energy. This is the bhakti conception. And every living being in this world is one of Sita and Ram's children. So therefore, from this perspective, to honor the environment, the ecology, and to make the world actually a better place is not just a mundane conception. It's not just, let's make the better place for our children and grandchildren to live. That's an ethical perspective, but from a spiritual perspective, it is our sacred duty to God to honor and respect everything in this world as His sacred property and to use it in a spirit of service. If you own a business, if you live in a house, if you have a family, if you have wealth, if you have property, it's all the property of God. It all must be used in harmony with God's will. And God's will is to keep it all very, very pure as far as possible. So in order to actually engineer a better world, it has to begin by engineering a proper perspective of the world and a realization of the world. There is a famous book that has been made into many movies over the years. It's called Frankenstein. Have any of you heard of that? Please raise your hand if you have heard of this. Anyways, Frankenstein, it's considered a horror movie. A movie that's supposed to get you scared. And people really like to be scared. It's amazing. In the entertainment industry, in the novel book industry, people, it's one of the biggest selling things. People like to get scared. It's a type of sense enjoyment. So it's considered just a scary book and scary movie, but actually it has a purpose. It's about a scientist who really wanted to do something good for humanity. Now, according to Gita, there are four essential causes of suffering in this world that are the biggest problems: birth, old age, disease, and death. Yes? And of the four, death is very difficult. Because disease, sometimes you can cure it. In old age, you can make the best out of it. And birth, you know, it only lasts a little while. Yes? But death, from a material perspective, at the time of death, everything is finished. And it is 100% inevitable for everyone. Sure as death, they say. So this scientist wanted to do the greatest thing that he could do for humanity. He wanted to bring a dead body back to life. And he wanted to create the ideal. He and his assistants were going to graveyards and getting the best parts of the best bodies of people that were dead. Yes, and he sewed them all together. And then with lightning and electricity and all sorts of other scientific mechanisms, he actually brought the body to life. And the idea is by doing that, he could actually create a technology where nobody would have to die. Sounds good? Anyways, he was successful. He made this model person. He brought a dead person back to life. But the problem is that dead person, his brain was really kind of deranged, and people were making fun of him because he looked kind of strange. And ultimately, he became a monster. And for the rest of that scientist's life, he terrorized him. He caused the death of practically his whole family. And the scientist, his whole life from that point on, was trying to destroy what he created. But he couldn't, because what he created was so powerful, it couldn't be destroyed. He was doing everything he could to destroy it, and meanwhile the monster was destroying everything that he had. And he wouldn't destroy him because he knew, if I kill your wife, if I kill your parents, if I kill your children, if I kill every, that's going to hurt you more than killing you. There's a moral to the story. That even with good intentions, if we try to make solutions in this world through science, technology, whatever, without understanding the sacred principles behind material nature, if we do it in a way that is not in harmony with the compassionate divine plan of God, then it has an opposite effect. Because most of technology that's creating all this pollution, and even the technology that's created nuclear weapons, initially was for positive, productive, relatively good purposes. The scientists like Oppenheimer and others that created the atomic bombs, they actually wanted to do something good for the world. But when the first test of the bomb, when Oppenheimer saw it, he immediately thought of the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna manifests his universal form as the destroyer of everything. And he realized, I have created a monster. And at that point, he actually went to the President of the United States, Harry Truman, and begged him and pleaded him, disband these bombs, don't use them, because it's going to lead to destruction of the world. It's going to create the most terrible human rights crisis the world has seen in killing so many innocent people. And then our enemies, when they see we have this bomb, they're going to be putting all their money and time and energy into making a bigger bomb than us, and then we're going to have to make bigger than them, and then they're going to make bigger to them, and then the science of how it, other nations are going to get it, and that's what the world... So just stop it now. But it was already in the wrong hands, and they dropped it. And hundreds and thousands dead. Then they dropped it again. And then the people of Russia, it's the Cold War. If America has it, we have to have a better one. We have to have... Now there's thousands of these bombs everywhere. And one crazy person who just presses a button can create a reaction where all over the world people are dropping them. And it was created with good intentions. There are so many examples we can give. We're talking about cancer and all of this. Yes, grow crops, get heavy chemicals and put them in the ground and put pesticides, heavy chemicals. It makes it easier to keep the insects away and it makes the crops grow faster. It does. It was probably invented with very good intentions. But the problem is the food becomes toxic. And everyone in the world practically is eating toxic food. And now there's a rise in organic food, especially in the West. It's coming gradually in India for organic, natural foods without pesticides and chemical pesticides or fertilizers. And you have to pay so much more to get nice food and water. How much we have to pay just to drink some water? There's so much water coming through our taps, but most people are afraid to even drink it for good reasons. When I first came to India, I would always just drink the water right out of the river Ganga, or drink the water right out of Yamuna, or the Gomati River, whatever, just drinking. And it was so nice. I don't have that much faith to do that anymore. I know it's a sacred river, but there's a battle. It's a sacred river, but all this unsacred stuff is dumped into it. These are serious problems. Why? Many are built on good intentions, but without proper knowledge. If this world is the only reality, then who cares? If we become millionaires and billionaires, it really doesn't matter how many people suffer, because ultimately it's about me. That's the world is the only reality. And if the world is an illusion, then let's just meditate and get out of this contaminated, filthy world forever and let people do whatever they want with it. I'm out. Or as they say in America, I'm out of here. Huh? But this Vaishnava philosophy, this Gita philosophy, is such an incredible key to the future of life, both in this world and beyond. In order to actually go beyond and actually get out of this world and attain prema and go to Krishna's abode, we have to, while in this world, treat it as God's sacred property and treat every living being as God's sacred children. Mamaivam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Krishna tells, every living being is my part and parcel. Aham bija pradapita. I am the father and mother of every living being, wherever there's life. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmanika vihastini suni chaiva supakya cha pandita samadarshana. True knowledge is to see everyone with equal vision, because we see everyone as part of Krishna, beyond the bodies and the mental conditions, which are temporary. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhridam sarva bhutanam gyatvamam shanti mrityati. There can be peace, Krishna says, when we understand that everything is ultimately meant for God's pleasure. Samsidhir haritoshanam. And that everything, all the planets and all the things within all planets are God's property, not to be used according to our whims. There's a beautiful story of Srila Prabhupada. He was, I think it was in Mayapur. And they were developing a wonderful project for him. And they were showing him around on a tour. They were showing him new buildings that were being built. They were showing him nice agricultural fields where crops were being cultivated. They were showing him, you know, students, you know, being in schools. And Prabhupada, as he was walking, you know, between one place and another in a field, he pointed his cane into a field, which didn't appear to be anything going on. He says, "Don't you see?" And these are all the biggest leaders of ISKCON, his society. Of course, I wasn't there because I was not a big leader. But he was looking, and he said, "Don't you see?" And everybody was looking, and they didn't know what to see. He spoke more emphatically, "Don't you see?" And they were thinking, you know, is he seeing Krishna? And is Krishna playing his flute and we can't see him? "Don't you see?" And they said, "We don't know what to see." And then Prabhupada went into the field and he went to a water faucet, a spigot, a water faucet that was dripping water. And he turned it off. He said, "This is Krishna's energy. Devotional service means not to waste Krishna's energy, to honor Krishna's energy." And Prabhupada said, "This is Krishna consciousness. To actually be conscious of Krishna, even in this world." And that's how. That everything is his, and everything is ultimately to be used in harmony with his will, and his will is that we live with compassion and devotion. Engineering a better world begins with engineering our own inner consciousness. And to the degree we actually understand the beauty and the love and the greatness of Krishna, to that degree we'll actually love Krishna. And we will see this world, everything in this world is a beautiful opportunity to serve Krishna and to elevate people's lives and elevate people's consciousness. I'd like to end with one small story. I actually write it in The Journey Home, in this book that I wrote. It's a story that illuminated my heart with an understanding of how much knowledge can transform the way we live. I was at one time living in Nepal. Shri Radha Gopinath ki Should I tell the story or should we have kirtan? Sir? Okay, I'll tell it in as fast as possible. So I was in a place called Bodhanath in a field. Actually, it was a forest with many fields around it. And I was sitting under a tree meditating. There was nobody around. It was so quiet. It was so peaceful. I was meditating. Suddenly I heard this it's like this loud footsteps that were really trampling hard. And I looked up and there was an enormous European man. He was probably well over 6 feet tall. And his body was huge with muscles. He had gigantic muscles like boulders on a mountain. And you don't get like that by watching television. You don't get that way by, you know, laying on a beach and getting sun. You have to work really hard to get muscles like that. You know, obviously for years and years and years, he was like a champion bodybuilder. He was massive with strength. He was huge. He was carrying a big bag of groceries in his arms. And he was walking with such harsh footsteps, it was like... So I just kind of, you know, looked at him and then closed my eyes again. Then I heard... So I opened my eyes again. And there was a band of monkeys. Perhaps 12 monkeys. I didn't count, but it was something like that. About a dozen monkeys. And they went in a circle around him. And they were screeching. And every one of them was staring at him with eye to eye. They had green eyes. He had blue eyes. And they were just gazing in his eyes, and he was looking at their eyes. And their glances were so full of anger. And they showed their teeth. And the monkeys have a few really sharp, big teeth. And they were showing those teeth, and they were making their lips almost supernaturally, the way monkeys could make their lips go so high up, they practically disappear, just so that their teeth and gums really show. And they were... Then they started taking these little leaps toward this man. But they wouldn't actually approach him. They just kind of took a leap and then came back to... And he... They were just little brown monkeys. They weren't those big, opulent white ones. They were just little brown ones. So he held his groceries in one arm. And he reached down and picked up a big, huge rock. And he started like a hero in a Hollywood movie. He went, rah! He went, rah! And he started wheeling this rock around and aiming it toward the monkeys. And the monkeys came, they just took another jump closer. At that point, I actually could not believe what I saw. He put down the rock. And he stood there, trembling in total fear. I didn't look, but it's a good chance he may have urinated in his pants. But he was shaking in fear. He was just standing there. And one of the little monkeys just went right up to him and took the bag of groceries right out of arms and ran away with it. And he just stood there, didn't in any way object. And then all the monkeys got in a circle around the grocery bag to eat all the food that was in it. And now they couldn't care less about this Hercules European man. They were eating the food. And when their backs were turned to him, this man ran away the other direction. So I was thinking, that was very interesting. And I closed my eyes. Meditate. Now, I was kind of meditating on what I just saw. You know, that man was so strong and he was so scared. And then all of a sudden I heard, it was the monkeys again. And I opened my eyes. And I saw this little Nepalese boy. He was maybe about 7 or 8 years old. And he was really a skinny little boy. Just a tiny little skinny boy. And he was like skipping through the field. And he saw the monkeys with the grocery bag. And he picked up a little stone and went like this. And all the monkeys went, and they all scattered in all directions and ran away. Should I continue? So now they're all at a distance, like hiding in trees, and the little boy just comes up to the grocery bag and sits down and just starts eating stuff from it. And all the monkeys were so scared of this little boy that they wouldn't come near the bag. They were all just watching from a distance. So I closed my eyes again. And I was meditating on what is the lesson that God is trying to show me in this. And the message that I derived was, what that little boy, he didn't even weigh as much as one arm of that European man. Why were the monkeys scared of the little boy and not him? And the reason was, monkeys have a very mystic power to sense fear. Because they know, if you fear them, they can conquer you. That man may have been very strong physically, but in Europe, he never had any association with monkeys. So he didn't know anything about monkeys. So he feared the monkeys, because we fear things that we don't understand. But the little boy, he had no muscles whatsoever in comparison. And the little stone he picked up was nothing compared to the rock that big man picked up. The little boy couldn't even have picked up the rock, the big man. But he lived with monkeys all his life. So he had no fear of monkeys. Because he was fearless, the monkeys feared him. But because the other man had fear, no matter what else he did, the monkeys had no fear of him. Why do we fear death? We fear death because we don't really know what it is. Will I cease to exist? If I do exist, where will I go? For our relatives and our loved ones, what's going to happen? Do they cease to exist, or where do they go? We fear death so much because it's something we don't understand. But when we realize the eternal nature of the soul, not only theoretical understanding is like a map, which is useful to show us the way. But then with the map of our theoretical understanding from the words of the great scriptures and the words of the great saints, then we actually have to put it into our life through our sadhana, our spiritual practice, through our satsang, associating with people who enlighten us, and through our character, our sadachar. You see, when we actually realize the eternal nature of who we are, we realize nahanyate hanyamane sarire, that the soul is beyond death. And then death is not something to be feared. It is just as natural as the setting of the sun to end a day. But we know when the sun sets, it rises somewhere else. It's only in our vision. When we understand the true value of our eternal life, and we understand our true relationship with God, with Krishna, who is our Suhrita Sarvabhutanam, who's our intimate, most loving, well-wishing friend. Then not only do we not fear death, but we see the inherent beauty of the whole world. Even though it may be temporary, we see Krishna. Krishna tells in Gita, for one who sees me everywhere and everything in me, for that person I'm never lost, nor are they ever lost to me. Devotees showed Prabhupada once a beautiful sunset over the Pacific Ocean in California. They said, isn't this beautiful? Prabhupada said, Srila Prabhupada said in response, if you think the art is beautiful, you should see the artist. The art disappears after some time, but the artist is forever. And when we actually understand and love the artist of material existence, Krishna, then we could actually see his beauty. Even in these, we could see the permanence of his grace, of his beauty at all times, even through all the ever-changing experiences of life in this world. And we honor Krishna. So I was thinking like this, more or less. I didn't know Krishna at the time, but I was thinking God. And my eyes were closed, again I was meditating. And then I heard little sweet footsteps, like so I opened my eyes, and it was the little boy. He had the bag of groceries, and he walked right up to me, and he offered me a bunch of bananas. And when he offered me the bunch of bananas, I could see all the monkeys. They start going, and they were jumping up and down and really excited and enthusiastic. So I told him I don't want any bananas. I realized, you know, the monkeys are like the barometer, and I was I hadn't come to his level of fearlessness. So, and they could sense it in me. So I refused the bananas. But he didn't speak English, and I didn't speak Nepali, so he didn't really understand exactly why I was refusing them. But I said, no, 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 no. For you, for you. You eat them. I have so many bananas, you eat them. He was kind of confused that I wouldn't take his bananas. So he actually left them there. Left him next to me, and then he just happily walked away with the whole grocery bag with so many, there were so many more bananas and everything else in it, and the monkeys would not go near him. But I saw they all started after he went away. They wouldn't come near me as long as he was there, but after he went away. So I took the 12 bananas, and I was thinking, or whatever, it was a bunch, and I was thinking that the bananas look more, or the monkeys look more hungry than me. So I offered them to the monkeys. Thank you very much.
Swami Maharaj ki. Thank you, Maharaj, for inspiring all the students and other youth who have come today with such a brilliant talk. And you'll be happy to know that today there are more than 1,800 people attending in this Prerna festival, and everyone is so enlivened and thrilled by the description, especially of the monkeys. Thank you so much.